Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snow. For the world for past, present, and future stars. And coming to you live from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Yes, hello. And, you know, it's, as an old friend of mine used to say on a day like today, he said, this is a good weather for ducks. It's been raining for, it's been raining for like 24 hours. So we got a good soaking, but we're here. We're warm. We're ready to rock and roll and talk about some great fights, last week's fights, fights coming up tonight, things coming up in the future. But, yeah, man, excited. Got a good show ready.
Yeah, absolutely. We do. Look, there's a lot of going on in boxing with the announcement that Tyson Fury retired from boxing after his win over Dillon White. And we'll talk about later on in the show the historical footnote with that fight and also the women's fight. It's it looks like it's done very well, Taylor and Serrano. And we'll talk a little bit about that and that historical footnote that that fight left. And as we'll be traveling around the world with the heavyweight division, looks like it's going to it's looked like it's moving again with fights and all of that. And we'll talk about all of those different fights, the matchups with the Anthony Joshua, Usyk, and, you know, different things that's going on. All right. And you can't leave out Trevor Bryant, and we'll be talking about that announcement with a mandatory fight with the WBA, and what does that mean in the heavyweight division and the IBF fight. That we'll talk about that bad luck guy. And so, we got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
yeah. So come on, Bob, come on, take us around the world. Let's go for it.
Okay, right. We're going to start today heading out to the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, where Saul Canelo Alvarez, 57 wins, 1 loss, 2 draws, 39 knockouts, moves up to take on the champion Dimitri Bivol, who's 19-0, 11 KOs, and this is for the WBA Super World Light Heavyweight title. The co-main event will have Montana Love, 17-0-1, 9 KOs, stepping in with Gabriel Valenzuela, 25-2-1 with 15 knockouts, and that's for the IBF North American Super Lightweight belt. 3 10-rounders are also on the card. We have 12-0 with 9 knockouts, Shakram Gyasov, and the 22-2-1, 20 KOs in there, Christian Gomez. They both seek the vacant IBF North American welterweight strap. Flyweights, Joselito Velasquez, 14-0-1, and Jose Soto, 15-1 meet up. And we kind of led onto this a little earlier, but we now have, for now, it's Zhe Li Zhang, 23-0-1, 18 KOs versus Scott Alexander, 16-4-2 with 8 KOs in a heavyweight bout. Elsewhere in the United States, we have USA fight. They'll be in Hialeah, Florida, where Anthony Martinez, 12-1, and the 17-0 David Light vie for the open WBO International Cruiserweight crown. Co-headline with the Lenier Perro, 6-0 versus Hector Perez, 7-4, fight for the vacant WBO NABO heavyweight strap. Benton Harbor, Michigan, tops their card with the featherweight clash between Jonathan Smith and Anthony Dave. Undefeated heavyweight Jermaine Franklin, 20-0, 13 KOs, returns to action after a year, facing Rodney Moore, 20-21-2. 30-6 lightweight Ryan Kozlowski is showcased in Bridgewater, Massachusetts, in a female super bantamweight battle between Maureen Shea, 29-2-1, and Kalista Salgado, 19-13-3, tops the fair at the Carnesecca Arena at St. John's University in Queens, New York City. Murraysville, PA, closes the show with Jonathan Ryan Burrs crossing the rope with fellow middleweight Danny Rosenberger. And in Philadelphia, the spotlight is on super bantam Brandon Chambers, who's 7-0-1. Tyson Sports TV makes the move up to Sydney, Nova Scotia, Canada, where hometown legend Ryan Rosicki, 14-1, all 14 of those wins by the knockout, faces off with the unbeaten Argentine Yamil Alberto Peralta, 13-0, 6 KOs. And that's for the open WBC International Cruiserweight title, with the co-feature being the Carolyn Redmond versus Simone Aparicio da Silva female super welterweight clash. Over in Brampton, Ontario, Zolt Darani, 16-1, and Flavio Michel vie for the country's vacant welterweight crown. Female Lightfly stopped the card in Ciudad Nezahualcoyotl in Mexico, where Diana Itzel Garcia and Katia Correa Montoya square up. San Luis Rio Colorado Sonora will see undefeated 18-year-old Dana Ponce Bolano, 7-0, defending her ABF Continental America Super Bantamweight belt against the challenger Linda Contreras, who's 2-2-1. And the co-feature pits 12-0 Super Bantam Sergio Rios Jimenez against Isaac Butena Palafox. Barugas in Colombia hosts the Luis Diaz Marmol versus Yogli Herrera, lightweight attraction. Buenos Aires, Argentina has two venues tonight. Mar del Plata hosts the Yoel Ivan Marínguez versus Franco Andres Cayal, lightweight showdown. And at the Athletic Club, light heavies Angel Julian Sacco and Nicolas Javier Brito meet up. Los Heros in Mendoza highlights the Lucas Isaias Aguirre versus Bertin Simon Garay, lightweight encounter. Over to Africa now, where Isaac Kayombe fights for the vacant WBF African Heavyweight Championship in the topper in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Welterweight headline in Rome, Italy, where Patrizio Maroni and Christian Navitano meet up. Busto Arcisio in Lombardia hosted Samuel Gonzalez versus Nicole Escobar, super lightweight clash. Super welterweight Sergio Fernandez and David Benci clash in the feature from Elvisa in Islas Baleares in Spain. France is busy tonight with eight bouts scheduled throughout the countryside, topped with Ségolène Le Fay. She's 15-0, defending her WBO World Female Super Bantamweight strap against the challenger Melania Soroche, 18-2-2. In the main event from Le Fay's hometown of Douai Moors, cruisers clash in Begley's Gironde as Patrick Mbida takes on Rashid Kata, while in Pizanas in Herol, undefeated super lightweight Joad Belmekti, 14-0-3, steps in with Luca Macaroni, 17-8-4. Super light honors Azun debuts against Jordan Gonzalez in the feature from Shuri Comtal in Roar, while in Agnew Manche, the super welterweight meeting of Keanu Close and Adamani Zanune closes the show there. And the curtain comes down in Genos, Rome, after the Malik Arbi versus Rati Migliali welterweight contest. Super welters also headlined in Clan Guerre in Haute-Stova and in Douai-Somme, with Lakhdar Uzar battling Fouad El-Masali in the former, Kamel Gwersiv standing in with Jonathan Bulo in the latter. Landau, Rhineland-Pfalz, Germany has a big night of title fights, topped with Fatih Altunkaya, 26-0, 24 knockouts, duking it out with Denise Altz, 11-2, for the WBC Asian Boxing Council Continental Cruiserweight Championship. Undefeated knockout artists square off for the WBC ABC Light Heavyweight Belt as Diab Simone Dobshock, 18-0, all 18 wins by the knockout, steps in against Ibrahim Ilderim, 9-0, with all 9 of his wins coming by the knockout. And it's Arbor Bellegue, 9-0, versus Robin Hardwick, 6-1, the WBC Youth Silver Cruiserweight strap. And Antonio Hoffman, 23-2, clashes with Jason Gonzalez, 16-6, for the IBO Ibero-American Super Welterweight title. Cologne hosts the bout for the IBF European Middleweight belt as Denis Radovan enters the ring to fight Rafael Bergeron, 30 wins, 6 losses in the draw. Also featherweights Ardo Kegai, 17-1-1, and Ruben Tostada Garcia, 25-9, do battle. Also, Christina Hammer, 27-1, faces Luisa Davidova, 6-3, in a female super middleweight confrontation. The heavyweight attraction of Sasha Arsumanjan and Makhaz Sujachavili finishes the night in Karlsruhe in Baden-Württemberg. Maria Ezerdorf in Austria tops the bill with the welterweight bout of Anil Desdemir versus Vanhar Haziri. While Polsat Sport HDTV will broadcast from Bialystok, Poland, for the co-headlines of the heavyweight fight between Jakub Sosinski and Carlos Cardon, and the super middleweight clash between Pribislav Gozan and Bogdan Milanovic. The IBA Intercontinental Super Welterweight title fight between Fabius Baella, 20-1, and Ricardo Rubin Villalba, 20 wins, 5 losses, and a draw. That's the headliner in Timisoara, Romania. Female featherweight Sanjita Birdie is showcased in Gurgaon, India. And in Tokyo, Japan, it's Kenshin Hosokawa versus Kota Arika in the Super Bantam Finale. Two titles being contested in Bangkok, Thailand. 9-1 Tana's Ogjunta slugs it out with Jacques-Raoul Maljogonian, who's 41-1-1. For the WBA Asia flyweight strap, Nkitia Holtung and Kididek Kimonsuk vie for the open WBA Asia light. Owen Hills in Queensland, Australia hosts a couple of title fights as well. Broadcast on KO Sports TV and Australia Fox TV with Benjamin Kelleher, 15-4-2 with four knockouts, fighting Peter Saint-Lesuie, who's 9-0-1 with seven knockouts. And that's for the vacant IBL Oceania Aurea and Cruiserweight belt. And Jaden Tate, 7-0 versus Manuel A. Matit, who's 4-2 for the Open Australian National Boxing Federation Australasia lightweight crown. Nathan in Queensland will see Cesar Mateo Tapia, 13-0, step in with Orlando Wenceslao Mancia, who's 18-9-1, and they battle for the WBA Oceania super middleweight title. Sydney, New South Wales, also in action, headlining with the Travis Goose versus Jonathan Tuhu super welterweight contest. And wrapping up today in Auckland, New Zealand, for the light heavyweight bout between the 7-0 John Parker and 2-5 Dylan Wright. And that's 18 countries all around the world hitting all the continents today and, you know, getting back to Las Vegas.
Yeah, we landed in down in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand. And let me tell you what, you know, Canelo Alvarez, whenever he's climbing in the ring, you know it's going to be a crowd. The Mexican people love him and they come out to support him. So, you know, he's going around touting, trying to get all of these different titles in different weight classes. And Eddie Hearns was saying that Canelo Alvarez said that he wants Usyk next, who's the WBA super champion. Him and Anthony Joshua were supposed to be getting up. So I guess we got to wait and let these fighters finish, because there's a lot going on in the heavyweight division. So if that Anthony Joshua and Usyk fights, if that gets going, you know, at 201, if Canelo Alvarez, if he gets passed by Val, it will be something for him to move up. You know, I think that would be a great matchup, but you know, Usyk with that all offensive machine and his weight may be a little bit too much for Canelo Alvarez. As we'll see with this value, if he's able value to go out, put pressure on Usyk, make him back up, make him fill that extra weight, and really bang him. You know, because all Canelo Alvarez really is a blown-up middleweight. we'll see how that fight unfolds, see if he can go out and do anything, and see if he's ready to get whacked to the body. You know, Canelo Alvarez with that left hook to the body, like the great Julio Cesar Chavez threw. You know, it looks like Canelo Alvarez have mastered that in that right hand. And guys don't have no answer or no counter to keep the guy out of those counter punches that keep a guy out of your body like that. And whether he's able value to deliver that kind of counter punching to keep him out of his body and back him up, let him feel the pressure of his weight, is going to be another thing, or just the atmosphere of the crowd just eat them up with nerves and things like that. So that's what makes the fight. So we'll see. Canelo Alvarez should come out on top. Sure, another belt.
Yeah, he's already been up at that light heavyweight taking on Kovalev and beat him too. So he fought at 175 already. So yeah. We'll see how he does tonight too. You know, let's go back to that heavyweight division. We'll start off with the story of Filip Hrgović. Man, this guy's got no luck. Man, you know, after all the people, he's trying to get that IBF eliminator, trying to match up with somebody. He went through like seven different people, finally settled on the Chinaman Zhilei Zhang. And then, unfortunately for Hrgović, his father passed away a couple of weeks ago, and he backed out of this fight. So now we end up with Zhilei Zhang facing Scott Alexander tonight, too. So, man, that's just that's a string of tough luck.
I told you, he don't have no luck. And I told you before, if it was raining $1 million bills, what we say, get hit with a couple pennies.
Yeah. Oh, man.
You know, so as that for the IBF eliminator for the IBF heavyweight championship, we'll take a close look at that. But Don King has announced June 11th down at the Miami High Line, you know, with Trevor Bryan versus Daniel DeBonis for that number one title position that Daniel DeBonis is in. I think a good puncher, young, 24 years old, with Bryan being 32. And it seems in the news, Larry Holmes has come down there and teamed up with him. Bryan said that was his hero as a fighter. He had a lot of respect for him. So Larry Holmes has joined that team. You know, if the guy can do anything, he can listen to Larry Holmes. One thing about Larry, he was always in dynamite shape, and Larry Holmes always gave it his 100% in all those title fights, you know, that he had. Just think, Eastern Assassin right down the road from Pottsville, Bob. You know. Yeah, so let's see if Larry can't do nothing. If he just take one tool that Larry had was that dynamite jab. You know, the right. The jab helps you find your distance, your range, your timing. It's an offensive weapon. It's a dynamite defensive weapon. And the shortest distance in between line is a straight point. That's why an effective jab will always help you win fights. And if he can take that out of Larry Holmes' repertoire, his arsenal of offense, how he used it in a defensive weapon with a puncher like Daniel DeBonis from England, he should make it and have a field day with that. This is a dynamite fight. It's a dynamite matchup, and it's going to be on pay-per-view, Bob.
Right.
Looks like Don is not sitting down at 90 in August. He'll be 91, man, and still getting guys in the position, still keeping them going, still biting to get to those main guys like Tyson Fury and Usyk and Anthony Joshua. And it looks like he has it lined up pretty good, Bob.
Yeah, no, that sounds like it's great. We're looking forward to that, just about a month away. And yeah, also we have some news about Don King and his son Carl too, right? They're being inducted, I believe, into the Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame on June 3rd.
Yeah, June 3rd
right
and
before
June 3rd.
That,
yeah, right before that. And if you remember, Bob, we had Carl King and Craig Hawk on the show announcing that when they first announced it, he came on our show to announce that Hall of Fame induction. And the funny thing about that is Craig was promoted by Don King, and he got his shot at the great Julio Cesar Chavez at the Rosemont in Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
With Julio Cesar Chavez, and to come back and as president of the Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame and have the opportunity to induct someone like Don King that promoted you when you were fighting is just an added plus, and it speaks value of the Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame of what a great job Craig is doing and all the attendees. You know, you got Tito Trinidad and his father. They're going to be inducted that night. Tito Trinidad and his father, man, it's a good inducted class, Bob.
Yeah, father and sons we're talking about too there, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The Trinidad and Don King's son, Carl, you said they were on the show with Craig Hawk. And yeah, just talking about the great job that they're doing out there with the Indiana Boxing Hall of Fame, man. Yeah, Indianapolis.
Yeah,
indeed.
Yeah, June 3rd and June 4th. And then the WBA heavyweight championship fight is June 11th in the Miami High Line and down there in Miami, man. Man, at 91, Don King gets it.
He is.
He gets it. But that Bob, should be an awesome dynamite fight, a dynamite matchup. And clearly, you know, like we were saying before, Trevor Bryan's name, because he's undefeated, he followed the rules and the regulations to get his opportunity at the heavyweight championship and won it through the rules and regulations that govern the sport. You see, with the IBF, my man's trying to find the rules and regulations, but he can't get no fighter to fight him. Then he gets one to fight him, and then he falls out or whatever. He just needs to step aside and let some people fight for it that want to be champion of the world. You know, can't be that much confusing, that much bad luck. So, you know, if he don't want to do it, let somebody who wants to fight, somebody wants the opportunity, keep that heavyweight division going. Because when the heavyweight division's going in boxing, Bob, we know that boxing is at the top of its game when the heavyweight division's going. And with that big fight with Dillian Whyte and Tyson Fury, when that happened, 94,000 fans, to watch that fight and live on pay-per-view and stuff like that, to witness that fight shows that the heavyweight division is, boy, is it going. An announcement of Tyson Fury retiring, he said, that's it, I had enough, I call it quits. Boy, did that send shockwaves around the world. Still other big names out there like Anthony Joshua, you got Dante Wilder, former heavyweight champion, Anthony Ruiz, former heavyweight champion. Then you got a matchup coming up with Joe Joyce, right?
Right, yeah, that's coming up too. Also, this is going to be interesting tonight. There's a guy that's getting a good shot at it too, Zhilei Zhang. You know, and he was like eighth on the list for Hrgović, and he's staying in there. And this guy's undefeated. You know, we don't know much about him. He's fighting out of China. But, man, he's 23-0. He's a big guy, and we'll see. He shouldn't have any problem with Scott Alexander, but it's a good way to get his name out tonight. He's on that card, and people will get a chance to see whether he's, you know, what he's up to. You know, this is something where he's got a shot, man. You know, he's ranked, what, 14th or 15th or something like that, but all of a sudden he's right there. So, you know, a big shot for him, too, tonight to see what he does.
Yeah, we'll see what he does. He's a rising star, but if he ever can get a latch onto a big giant following in China, boy, with all those people in China, man, oh man, does that speak value and speaks money? But you got to be able to fight, and you got to be able to deliver. You got to have personality. You got to be able to talk. You got to be able to walk it, talk it, fight it. There's a lot to becoming a boxing star where people want to tune in and watch you, man. So, you know, you gotta be able to deliver it. One thing about Tyson Fury, he walks it, he talks it. And, he's for writers, guys like us on the radio, he always gives us something to talk about. He keeps himself in the news. He's a character. He does this. He does that. He's involved in this. He gives away his whole purse. That alone is something to talk about for weeks in and weeks out. Our guy is awarded all of this money, and then he ends up giving up all his thing to charity. But man, what a big heart, and what a grateful thing to do in boxing, for someone to do that. And it's really something.
Right, and we'll talk more about it next week, too. But speaking of money, we got Money Mayweather exhibition next week, next Saturday, on top of the helipad there on the big tall building in Dubai. We'll see what happens there, but we can hear the cha-chinging right now, already starting for the Money Man.
Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. You know, Money Mayweather, as we always says, he's always able to find the money. show him the money and he'll be there. And seems like they showed him the money. He's going to be there way up high, high altitude. I just hope he did some high altitude training, because when you're fighting at a height like that, you know, you start throwing punches up there in the air, you get kind of winded too.
Yeah, I wonder what the wind's going to be like, too. You know, I don't know what the winds will be like on top of that building, but, you know, you get it that high, you're on the desert, you got water on one side, desert on the other. Sounds like it could be some winds happening there, too. It could be fighting in a windstorm. We have no idea, but, man, you know, it's going to be wild.
It's going to be wild. It's interesting just alone how they're going to put, you know, some seats up there, how they're going to put the ring in the center of the helicopter pad,
yeah.
And people are going to have to watch walking around off there. Because one slip, baby, it's a long fall. Can't be no entourage pushing the crowd to ring up there.
Right.
That's a long fall. But if you remember, I believe Tiger Woods hit a golf ball. He teed off Tiger Woods up there. And
oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
And smacked one, you know, or a couple. But, yeah, it's something interesting at this stage of the game. But, you know, Floyd is going around putting on these exhibitions, and he's keeping himself in the news. He's keeping himself interested. And, you know, people are saying he done kicked this fighter to the curb, Gervonta Davis, to the side in a promotion. To go promote himself. They said, man, well, it looks like he's making more money on the helicopter pad than he is with Gervonta Davis, so it all makes sense. He's going to collect the money, Bob. He's going to collect the money.
Right.
Who else is he going to pay the fighters?
Right. You know, I still go back to the Tyson Fury, and, you know, we always look when guys say they're retiring, especially somebody like Tyson Fury, who's kind of, you know, at a peak here. And, you know, he's talking still about Francis Ngannou, the MMA heavyweight champion. He still wants to fight him. So, you know, and he talked about wanting some of that Mayweather money, you know, and going and doing exhibitions. So he may be done, but he's not done. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, Bob, with him, with Tyson Fury, you know, he got all kind of antics to keep himself in the news. In retiring, you know, say he's retiring, it keeps a lot of the pressure off of them where the media, you know, they keep, you know, disturbing them. They give them a little peace, you know. All the greats have done it in the past, you know, when they're reaching the latter stages of their career. But, hey, when the money's big, you know, talk now, him and Anthony Joshua, that may be a fight for England for him to say that. But, Bob, without further ado,
there you go.
we did have Henry on here, but it seems like we lost him. So, you know, without further ado, Bob, I hope he calls back in here.
Right, and he wants to check in. We're going to talk about the Katie Taylor Amanda Serrano fight.
Yeah. We want to thank our boxing historian Henry Hascop into the show, to the World Boxing Review radio show. Henry, welcome into the show. How you doing?
Doing well. I've been listening to you guys talk, and, you know, of course, that Bob, I don't know how he could say them names to them, them fighters, but he does a great job, and you do a great job, and it's a real honor to be on with you guys.
Well, Henry, we want to first congratulate you. Just recently, you were inducted into the National Boxing Hall of Fame. What a class. You had three classes, the trilogy. A lot was going on before we get into the Tyson Fury and Serrano, the historical note. Congratulations from the World Boxing Review radio show for your accomplishments.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, thank you so much. And I think you had a big part of that. And you know, it was an event. I mean, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard was there, and Michael Phoenix, Pinklin Thomas, Marvin Johnson was there, you know, Cuevas was there, Gonzalez was there. I mean, even Danny Fred Lopez, he was there. And, you know, Yaki Lopez was there. I mean, you know, it was really a great event. I mean, you know, I figure know, they had like 35 inductees, because, or maybe 36, you know, if you count a father and son. I figured it was going to really be, you know, a long, long time. I mean, we got in there around 11 o'clock, and the ceremonies didn't start until about 12, and it's almost 4. That was like 4 hours of speeches, but the thing is that they were all interesting, you know. I mean, all these mm-hmm. great fighters come up there and, you know, had their say, and, you know, like when Sugar Ray Leonard came in, you know, he was mobbed with people and everything like this, and he was very gracious, you know. He took pictures with just about everybody, and, you know, it's really, really nice to see that. Put a little...
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Henry, come on. And also, so we can squeeze this in here, it looks like Ring 8 in the New York Hall of Fame had their dinner just last week, was it? Hello? It looks like we lost Henry, Bob.
It was picking on off a little bit there, too. Yeah, bad connection. Something happened there.
Yeah. And maybe his phone went dead, and we'll try to get him back on the line here. But yeah, Bob, it looks like they had some type of roundup up there for that trilogy for the National Boxing Hall of Fame, as Henry was telling us about.
Right, they had a couple of years because
I think he's back. Hold on, the call
okay.
must have dropped.
Yeah,
hey, Henry,
got cut
like
off. It's the second time I got cut off. For some reason, I don't know.
Yeah, it does.
You sound better now.
Are you on a walk around phone or something?
Well, I'm on a landline.
A cordless? You're on a cordless one because it was crackling up. Yeah, the battery might be getting low on it because it was crackling and fading in and out. But Henry, yeah. So look, Henry, the New York Hall of Fame in Ring 8, it looks like they had their dinner, too, to my understanding.
Oh, yeah. They had a great, great dinner, too. I was asked to introduce all the honorees coming in as we started the show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had a very good, class. I guess, the star was Shannon Briggs, believe it or not. He came up and he told some stories, had everybody roaring, and a big guy like that, he actually broke down in tears, and it was real tears because I was standing right beside him, and I'm looking at his face, and I said, oh my God, you know, that's real tears coming down his face. Then he's a huge individual. I mean, I'm not small either. Yeah. I'm a little over 6 foot, and you know, he gave me a hug. I thought Mighty Joe Young was hugging me. I said, oh, my. You know, I see his big arm is coming around me. And I said, oh, boy, here it comes. You know, you have to brace yourself. But he was really funny. You know, Johnny Turner, you know, he was inducted. You know, he lost his brother just a day or so before the event. And, you know, he made a speech. And, I guess he made the speech before. You know, he wrote the speech before his brother passed, and, you know, he was breaking down, like, a little bit, and I had to put my arm around him, you know, when he mentioned his brother's name. And Donnie Lennon, he also made a great speech, and he was in front of, his wife and I guess his son and maybe his daughter or his son's wife was standing right in front of him. And you could see the emotion on their faces as he was making a speech. You know, Michael Bent, you know, he was there. I mean, it was several, like, world champions that were there. And they made a, you know, it was just a great thing. Like, Vernal Phillips, you know, he was one of them. Don Elbaum, of course, he had some stories to tell. And Bill... Vagan, he was an all-time writer, you know, he was very good also, and of course Bob Duffy, and we had Larry Barnes, you know, he was inducted, and who else, Ron McNair, who was a professional boxing judge, Jill Diamond, you know, who's a really a class act when it comes to WBC and international chair of the WBC Cares, and Mike Silva, he was one of them, and Johnny John the Heat Vettorosa, you know, he made a very nice emotional speech too with his family all in front of the dais and taking all kind of pictures. And the MC, you know, of course, I started it off, I help out and everything like this. And then, you know, David DeLamonte, you know, he was the MC, and he, you know, he always does a spectacular job. He did the show the night before with the Serrano-Taylor fight. You know, he was the ring announcer. And, you know, he's coming back from that terrific or horrifying motorcycle accident where his whole back, you know, he was broken up and, you know, like almost in half. And, you know, he's back as good as, I don't want to say as good as new, but his voice is good as new. I mean, he did a great job. So it was good. You know, Bob Duffy, you know, he's the president of that organization as well as Ring 8. And, you know, he puts it all on, and I try to help him out as much as I can. But it like I said, 2 weekends in a row, 2 Hall of Fames, and you know, I mean, if you went to, you know, one or the other, I mean, you really got your money's worth. It was really, really
great. What great classes and great people that are participants in boxing, and that's what keeps boxing alive. But, Henry, let's dig into this historical note. Bob and I was talking about Tyson Fury and the White fight. Tell us the historical note on that fight, and then we'll get into Serrano and Taylor. But Tyson Fury and White fight.
Well, you know, to put in, like I said, 94,000 fans in the seats, you know, that's historic as it is. There's only a few fights in history that was over 100,000. You know, you had the Tooney Dempsey fights. They had 2 of them, and they were over 100,000. Of course, Chavez and Greg Haugen fight. But you know, this was a spectacular event. You know, they always say boxing, you know, is dying, but it's not dying over there. I mean, to draw so many people, and he wasn't even going against the best guy, you know. I mean, White is very good. He's probably in the top 4, you know, of any heavyweight right now, and he did have a good knockout in his last fight, so he was a threat. But the way I see it is Tyson Fury has gotten better and better over the. You know, course of his career. I remember when he fought Sam, what was that, Cunningham, Steve
right.
Cunningham. You know, I mean, he was knocked down. He was behind, you know, and he was, you know, Cunningham, you know, wasn't, you know, a real heavyweight or anything like this, you know. And, you know, he was actually getting the better of Tyson Fury. Now if they fought, you know, underneath the same circumstances, you know, Tyson Fury would probably walk right through him. So he's really improved.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, like I said, to draw that many fans, you know, is a testimony to the promotion. You know, Tyson Fury is more than just the boxer. He's probably the best self-promoted fighter, you know, heavyweight fighter since probably Muhammad Ali. I mean, you know, he comes, you know, he does all these antics and everything like this, the gypsy kid, the gypsy, you know, and everything like this. So he, you know, he has a great following, and, you know, he's very popular with you know, all the people around the world, especially after they found out that, and I think you may mention, that he gives a lot of his money away, you know, to charity. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, to homeless people and, you know, I mean, how can you root against a guy like that, you know? And you know, so, you know, it's, you know, I just hope he doesn't retire, you know, because, you know, what, you know, how are we going to put him in the, let's say, the ratings of all time? You know, he really didn't fight that. Okay, he fought Wilder, you know, a couple of times, But you know, it's not the you know, it's not the definitive
for
fight.
Sake.
Yeah. It's not, you know, like Ali,
and
Ali and Fraser, Ali
fight.
And Norton, Ali and Liston, and you know, and stuff like that. You know, so where do you rate the guy? The guy wasn't beaten, but who did he fight? You know, he only fought a couple of world contenders. But you know, if you go by resume, he probably won't stack up to, you know, Ali and Lewis and Holmes and, you know, Lennox Lewis and, you know, guys like that. But if you go one-on-one, you know, he stacks a little bit better because of his height. I mean, he's like 6'9", where he's got 260, 270. I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of hard to overcome, you know, especially with the skills he has. You know, he's not a Joe Palooka. You know, so, and White, like I said, White wasn't, let's say, the top contender, but I think he was like three or four at the time. And, but still, he was a threat. And Tyson Fury just, I think maybe White might have won one round, but, you know, it was mostly all Tyson. And like I said, I hope he reconsiders because I think a fight, I think it would go over 100,000 if he fought Joshua. You know, they're both
that's
from England.
Yeah, that's the fact that I think that missed. Yeah.
Yeah.
That they
I
missed.
Mean, Joshua
they missed
lost.
That.
Yep. They sure did. You know, but
they
you
missed.
Know.
They missed the promotional thing when they had it all lined up. It was headed in the right direction to make that fight happen. And, you know. Well, whatever way they couldn't put it together, it fell apart, and Anthony Joshua went to Usyk, and that was what it could have been, you know, a Tyson Fury night with Usyk, and you know he walked away with all what we're saying for namesake, you know, when two big names like that get together for a big fight,
they,
you know,
they got together, you know, I think it would. You know, I don't think there's a stadium in the world that could hold the people, you know, especially if, let's say, Joshua came back and had a good win, you know. Let's say he fought Usyk and actually beat him. I mean, then it would be really a, you know, titanic battle between the two and, you know, and being that's their home country. I mean, man, it would be enormous, you know. And like you said, you know, boxing, you know, it really goes with the heavyweights, you know.
Absolutely.
And if the heavyweights are on top, you know, it's going to be great. That's why if Tyson Fury does retire, who's there to take his place? You know, Usyk, you know, Wilder, Joshua, or Joyce, or somebody coming up that we don't even know about. You know, somebody has to step up. You know, right now, Tyson, you know, is right there. You know, he has a personality, and, you know, like you said before, you know, you got to have just more than that to draw the crowd, more than fighting ability. And Tyson does have that personality that everybody, you know, would like to see. So, like I said, if he retires, I think you know, the boxing will take a step back again, you know, and you know, as far as the heavyweights go.
Yeah, well, it looks like he has been because he keeps doubling down on it. And you know, just the other day he made a statement he's enjoying his retirement. But Tyson Fury's character, you don't never know what he's going to do. He can always keep things interesting, and this is why we're talking about him now. But Bob, let's get in this fight in Madison Square Garden Taylor and Serrano. Let's weigh in on that.
That was, you know, I'll be honest with you. I'm not a big fan of women fighting because, you know, most of the time it's one woman that dominates the other one, you know. I mean, like when Shields fights, I mean, you know, the scorecards are 10-0 most of the time. You know, it's just a one-sided fight, You know, certain ones they kind of had my interest when Ali and Frazier's, you know, daughters went, when Ann Wolf fought, and when Christy Martin. You know, I like to see that, but you know, that was very far and few between. But this fight, you know, I mean, they had all the hype, you know, and I'm saying, how many fights live up to a hype? Well, this one did, and more so. And then so, I mean, it was, you know, really the best woman fight I've ever seen. I mean, you know, especially like in the fifth round, I thought, you know, Amanda was either going to knock her out or hurt her. And then the next round, Taylor was going to be, you know, they were going to stop it because she was taking a beating. But the heart of Taylor came back, and it was unbelievable what she did. You know, and you know, they stood toe to toe several times, and you know, it was just you know, it was a big step for women boxing. If somebody, you know, it was the first time they ever saw a woman box, and they saw that fight, they'd be hooked. They want to see more, and I hope there is another championship bout between these two. You know, in Taylor's home country, because I think that would, you know, sell out maybe a big stadium in itself. And after the fight, this is what really impressed me. You know, I met Amanda at the Ring 8, one of the Ring 8 Christmas parties. She came, and you wouldn't even know it was her. I mean, she was a beautiful lady. I mean, she, you know, if you could look on Ring 8's website. I mean, I said, holy cow, you know, you don't even think they're the same lady. And she showed so much class and so much sportsmanship. You know, I mean, you know, really, you know, if you weren't an Amanda Serrano fan before that, you had to be after that. Because, you know, most of the, you know, people, you know, they would say, I was robbed, I was this, I was that. You know, judges don't know what they're doing. You know, I demand a rematch. And, well, no, she praised Taylor up. She, you know, and it was great to see. It was just great to see. And, you know, and pound for pound, these two were two of the best. I mean, the only one, I think, in the middle might have been Shields. You know, it's Shields, Taylor, and Amanda. You know, I think it was Taylor first, and Shields by Ring Magazine. Shields is second, and Amanda is third. But you know, I mean, it could have gone either way. You know,
it was one of those nights. It when the when guys or women are in there in the center of the ring, just going toe to toe, matching punch for punch. And nonstop action, you know, it's hard to judge. You know, coming down the stretch, it looked like Taylor edged her out coming down the down the stretch.
Well,
and later round, it looked like Serrano faded.
That's what I thought. I thought, you know, that the last few rounds, you know, Taylor did beat her. And I think that's what pulled it out. You know, like I said, the first three rounds of the fight, I mean, you could have scored either way. I mean, I think the second round, I think Taylor won, you know, pretty good. But the first round and the third round could have gone either way. I mean, I had a 2-1 after three rounds, you know, and one of the judges had a 3-0 for Taylor. Another one had a 2-1 for Taylor, and the other one had it 2-1 for Serrano after three rounds. So it was very close, you know, up until then. And even the next round, I mean, you know, that was a split round too. One of the judges had it for Taylor, and the other two had it for Serrano. So the first four rounds, I mean, could have gone either way. But then the fifth round, there could have been a score of 10-8 round. You know, in fact, one of the judges did score 10-8, but it wouldn't have made any difference in the score in itself, because the one, you know, if you look at the scoring, you know, Taylor won, let's say, on Feldman's card by 4 points, so that kind of ruled that out. And then the other one, I think it was Cavalier. He had it 96-93 for Taylor. So that's 3 points there. And he's the one that gave the 10-8 round. But, you know, even the next day at the New York State Boxing Hall of Fame, Jill Diamond, who was there for the WBC, mm-hmm. and also Melvina Lathan, who was there for the IBF, you know, they're both high-profile women. And they, you know, got up and said what a night last night was. You know, the women are, you know, they were put on the map for this boxing world. I mean, they really raved about it, and they should. You know, that was, like I said, that was a showcase.
And let's bring Bob back in, because, you know, you have the fight, you have the thing, but it's all about dollars and cents when it comes to saying if women's boxing really was alive that night. Bob, give us some numbers on the what it looks like the viewership and the pay-per-view did on the Zone.
Right, but first I just wanted, hey, Henry, how are you? First I want to just mention one more thing that Henry was alluding to. You know, when Serrano was talking at the end of the fight, she said something interesting, too, you know, talking about greater night. But she also threw in there that she's still a world champion. You know, so she's still. But you know what? You talk about 94,000 people packing Wembley out there in London. But, man, how about 19,187 people at Madison Square Garden? Man, it was packed to the roof. And, you know, one side of the arena is all Irish flags and everybody's chanting over there. The other side's got Puerto Rican flags and they're all screaming and yelling. Man, what a night that was. And we know that the Zone doesn't really give out numbers, but they're kind of leaking a number of 1.5 million people. Eddie Hearn saying the subscriptions were driven by this fight. Hey, I'm one of them. I signed up for the Zone just to watch it, you know, too. And there's a lot of people like me that said, man, I got to watch this fight. So not bad numbers. I just want to carry that over. Well, we'll go back to Taylor Serrano. But, you know, the interesting thing was, too, Bob Arum and Top Rank had a big card there with Shakur Stevenson, the old Jersey kid, fighting Valdez. And they actually kind of got on the coattails of that because they were pulling in $1.3 million, you know, for the fight that came on after the Taylor Serrano fight. So what a great night all around last Saturday night. But yeah, 19,000 plus at Madison Square Garden, man. It was wonderful to see that place rocking like that, man. Wow.
When it comes to money and eyeballs and stuff like that in boxing, that's how you know women's boxing has arrived, because the numbers are there where the dollars and cents are at. And to see women's boxing in Madison Square Garden, which is the mecca of boxing, to pull that many crowd, that many fans in, Henry, historical note, it has to be there as the top woman's fight in the history of boxing. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. As far as excitement goes, as far as expectations, like I said, when, you know, the fight was first put up, you know, everybody was expecting, you know, I mean, this is going to be the greatest, and we all heard this before, you know. But this lived up to everything and then some. I mean, it was just I don't see how you can really top that. You know, it would be very hard. Now they're talking about having three-minute rounds for women. You know,
that's the next thing, I think, Henry. You know, everything goes in different stages where you're pulling something up out of the ashes. You know, you're going to have different platforms to go. I think the women are ready to have 3 minute and 1 minute round rest for a championship fight. They showed that they can do it on that level, toe to toe, throwing all in punches, all the excitement, all the atmosphere, everything that goes into a huge fight, you know, the pulling of the media, all of that. You know, it's only fair to them for it to be 3 rounds and 1 minute rest. They proved it in that fight that they can do it, and they can do it in grand style and grand fashion. They can train. to throw all of those kind of punches that they were throwing, Bob, Henry and Bob, it takes a lot of conditioning. You just can't just go do it if you're not in condition. And they showed that they're ready for that, to move the women's boxing on that platform of equality, equal to men. They're ready for it.
Yeah, well, I think the top ones are. It's just like tennis. You know, I mean, a lot of people are saying, well, the men have the best out of five. The women have best out of three. Why is there a difference? You know, now we're getting into boxing. The women are 2-minute rounds. The men are 3-minute rounds. So that it's you know, I don't know. You know, I'm still up for that. I think Serrano and a Taylor fight could have been 3-minute rounds, and it would have been exciting. There might have been a stoppage. Serrano might have won by a knockout in that fifth round because she had Taylor hurt. But, you know, you never know. You know, you never know how the fight would take place if it was another minute. You know, would it be slower? I don't know. It's, you know, I think they have to experiment with that a little bit. And I'm for it for the big battle, for the big fights.
Yeah, for you know, I think it and because of the 3 minutes, just like they dropped 15 rounds to 12 rounds, the reason why they basically did it, they did it for TV. But they said on the back end it was because of the war of nutrition, the 15 round, but basically it was for TV. The downing of the
I did a whole segment
round.
On that one.
Yeah, but I think for women's boxing, for the segment for TV, I think they deserve the 12 rounds. Even if they bring it up to 2-minute rounds, 12 rounds, you know what I mean?
Well, 12 rounds would be very good. Yeah, 12 rounds would be excellent. I would, you know, I'm surprised they haven't done that already, you know.
I think they should do that. But for a historical part, man, of boxing, man, second to none for this bout, you know, to happen like that, man. I'm just glad because week in and week out, we talk about women's boxing around the world. Katie Taylor, when she was coming up, we talked about her. Deidre Gogarty, she was on the show. She was talking about her when she was a rising star. She said, look out for her. You know, she's the one. She's going to be it. She told us on the show here about to watch out for her over there because she was going to be it, and she hit it dead smack on the money. She's it. And we're just, she's it. Yeah, it's just we're happy that it all worked out for her, it all lined up for her, and Serrano herself it all right because she needed that too in her career, and it makes boxing and it shows that hey, everyone deserves a chance, everybody deserves the opportunity to prove themselves, and that's what they did.
Well, and so a couple of years from now, I don't say a couple of years, but after they retire, 3 years after they retire, they're going to be put on the ballot in the International Boxing Hall of Fame. And I don't think there's any doubt that both of them are going to be going in to the International Boxing Hall of Fame. I can't, you know, if you look at the people they've already inducted, you know, in the modern class for the women, I mean, these two ladies right up there with them, if not more so.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to meet again, and if they don't meet in the ring, hopefully they meet at Canastota. You know.
Well, let's end it on that because we got 40 seconds left on the show. Henry, we'd like to thank you for coming on today to give us that historical footnote with Tyson Fury and the White fight and Taylor Serrano fight.
And Bob, thank you for taking us around the world, nooks and crannies on the planet.
The French countryside.
So we like.
Yeah,
to
I wish
thank
I could say half to, those words.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snow. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer. And our radio aficionado, Bob Murray, and our boxing historian, Henry Hascop, every Saturday from 11 to 12. Thank you for tuning in.
All right.